Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donald in the Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Radio. Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here, well, actually, we're not really here. We're here
virtually
at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, in the center of Ames, center of Iowa, center of all. Yes, we are. KHOI Radio is a community radio station, and we're glad to be part of it. Yes, we are. Well, here we are. Another year is pretty much almost kind of
behind us. We are starting a new solar cycle.
Oh, we did.
We just made it through solstice, and now the days will be lengthening.
Thank goodness.
I hope that brings a better year this year, okay?
I think that's what we are all hoping for, so that's good. That's good. And speaking of solstice, there was this fantastic thing that happened last night, and we talked about it last year a little bit.
The last show.
There was this star convergence.
Actually, it wasn't stars. Whoa. It was planets. Jupiter and Saturn.
Yes. That happened last night. And you think, oh, well, that can go on without me. But my husband and I got in our car last night and we went out to the edge of town and looked up and we found it. And what was actually the two planets were visible by the eye. Yeah.
Right. It was low on the southwestern horizon. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was much touted as the Christmas star. And I'm looking up at it and I'm thinking, how did those wise men find that and travel a long ways on their camels? It looked just like a star to me.
Well, even without binoculars, you could see that it was a bright thing with a little streaky thing next to it, and the streaky thing with binoculars, you could actually see the rings of Saturn if you held it.
I'm sorry. I'm used to all the creches, and the star over the creches is enormous, really obvious. You know, I guess I'm just too commercialized. Our eyes are used to big, bright satellites flashing in the sky.
Not the same thing. However, what actually was probably more interesting than what was going on in the sky was everybody on the edge of town driving around slowly.
Oh. We were out somewhere on the northern side of town. There was practically a traffic jam of people trying to get out and look at it. I was pleased that everybody was, curious about a celestial phenomenon on the solstice.
Yes, we are engaged. Yes, we are. And I can just imagine the conversations, which are probably like the conversations in our car. So which way is south? No, and where was it? And should we go toward Boone or what about Napier? And oh, you're driving around, but it was nice to see. We were part of something.
Pandemic entertainment, right?
We were socially distanced and in our cars. There it was. The Great Conjunction last happened in 1623 and also 1226. Oh my goodness. So,
and the next one is like 2080 or something. So I'm going, not in my lifetime.
All right.
This was our one opportunity, and we showed up.
We showed up. I'm glad we could see it. It's a nice thing to do. Well, today on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we're going to talk about cookies and something called the Swedish torch and reindeer. It's that time of year. Yes, it is. Okay. First, I want to ask Donna about something we talked about last week and how it turned out. She was going to make something called Gravlax. How did that work out?
The Gravlax, I made it for our solstice dinner last night. And putting the beets on the Gravlax, which is just a way of curing raw salmon, it made it such a pretty magenta color. It really was, did not change the flavor much. But the color was notable. Very, very holiday edition. And I did use fennel. I used ground fennel and a little coriander, salt, pepper, sugar. And a lot of lemon zest. It worked.
Very good. Very good. I got a little taste of it too. Yeah. I thought it was quite dandy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. So, solstice. And now we are going to slide our way into Christmas. We've been giving recipes for Christmas these past few weeks. And today, let's talk about cookies. But first, what kind of books do you like to go to, Donna, for inspiration?
Oh, we did. I shared this book with Lana this year. It's very British, okay? Uh-huh. Very poshy British, okay? But it's called Sarah Raven's Complete Christmas Food and Flowers. Mm-hmm. So she does a lot of, what I like about this book is she starts like in November. Okay, here's what you have to do to get ready. You got to start forcing your bulbs early. You got to, she does decorations, Christmas Eve. She starts, you make the mincemeat early. She starts in August. She dries her allium heads.
I have to interject here that this woman kind of goes over the top, because especially for decorations.
That's posh British, right?
Posh,
what else has she got to do?
The food sounds really good, though.
Right, and so in September she's collecting rowan berries. Okay, we can't do that. She makes her quince cheese, her damson cheese, damson vodka gin. We did some of those things. We made vinegars. We made some. Actually, we haven't had this yet. I got to break out the, what did I put in it? The rose geranium lemon sugar vodka mixture. That will be for sipping on Christmas. So it has a lot of very, Christmas cakes, mincemeat pudding, prunes in Armagnac. She does sticky buns and, it's very English, modern.
But actually, lovely to look through. I like looking through those kind of books this time of year.
Yeah, you can think of her as along the lines of Nigella Lawson in terms of, although I have to say, Nigella's recipes are better. She's a really good recipe writer. But Sarah Raven has great pictures. So this is Sarah Raven's, R-A-V-E-N, Complete Christmas Food and Flowers.
So in the mood with some recipe books here. I enjoyed that book a lot. Well, one thing that Donna and I like to talk about for the season, actually we got started talking about this, Christmas cookies.
Lana is the queen of Christmas cookies.
But we all have opinions on Christmas cookies. So we started talking about 6 or 7 years ago now. We kind of met each other. Kind of on the radio, talking about Christmas things. Talking about Christmas things, yes. What? It's good.
Okay, your mic's going on and off.
It's supposed to go on and off. We are zooming here, and we're looking at some new microphones set up here, and it's throwing us for a loop. So bear with us here, folks. Cookies. I can deal with cookies. We're going to talk about cookies today. And we mentioned the convergence of Saturn and Jupiter. I wish to mention that Donna and I had a convergence for Christmas cookies.
We had a collaboration. It was an accidental collaboration. I started, remember a few shows ago I talked about making the orange peel, the candied orange peel, because that's one of those things you make in advance for your Christmas baking. And we did fruitcakes, and I used the candied orange peel in my homemade fruitcakes. And while I was at it, I found a recipe that is called lemon carrot marmalade. So it's, you shred the carrots and you cut up the lemons, take the juice out, and you just want the skin, and you dice them up, and then you cook it with sugar, and then you add 2 tablespoons of finely chopped candied ginger. So I kind of fuddled around with that recipe and came up with something that was, I mean, lemon marmalade is very bitter, but it's, I thought, oh, well, we can eat this on the cheese board or something because it was strong. But I liked it. It's not probably, you know, you give it to some people and they'll go, yeah, I don't think so. But you know, we have a circle of friends that appreciate my adventures on the palate. So we were passing it around and, I ended up putting some of it actually in the fruitcake because it does add a little ping to the whole thing. And then I gave Lana a jar and Lana did something spectacular with it.
Well, I have a tradition of making a white cutout cookie, and they're from an old family recipe from my father's side of the family. Elsie Burmaster used to cook up a storm, and her cookies were lovely. I use her white cookie recipe for my cutout cookies, and she always made a date-filled white cookie, a cutout white cookie that you would put a dollop of something in and fold over and
sweet,
kind of
sweet on sweet.
Yeah. It kind of like, well, her filling was half pound of ground dates, quarter cup sugar, one cup water, juice of one lemon. And I remember her actually adding some poppy seeds to that too. Simmering it down kind of turned into this.
Wow. You're adding sugar to the dates.
Well, of course. Oh, I mean, this is Wisconsin way, you know, this old family recipe. It's good. Then you'd put this inside and bake the cookies and it kind of ended up with this little,
like a little dough pocket with the dates.
Yeah. Like
inside.
A taco. Or actually, considering from my father's side, the family, the dates and poppy seed was kind of a riff on kolaches. So yeah. There you go. Yeah. There you go. However, this year, Donna gave me this wonderful marmalade, and I looked at that jar, and I said, ha-ha, I says. And I put some of that marmalade in those fold-over cookies, and it worked pretty good.
Bingo. It was really, really good because, of course, the marmalade is really strong, and it has sugar in it, but it is bitter because of the mm-hmm. bitter and sharp because mm-hmm. of the lemon. But wrapped in that fold of cookie dough, it was perfect. Perfect. Best Christmas cookie, I have to say. It's my favorite.
Bingo. So the Donna Lana Kitchen cookie convergence happened this Christmas.
I'll tell you what, Lana, next year, if the radio station does an auction, we'll auction off some of those cookies. They were remarkable.
Yeah, they were kind of good. Oh, and you can or cannot drizzle. I drizzled some frosting on some of it, just some powdered sugar, little bit of powdered sugar, milk, and a little bit of butter frosting, the kind that you drizzle and it dries up. Not much, just a little drizzle. It was good. Oh, I like making Christmas cookies. All right. And I have another recipe to share, and Donna's tasted these so she can jump in with the taste. Another family recipe from my mom.
Wait. You forgot one thing about this cookie recipe. Yeah. So Lana's got these two recipe cards from her mother in her mother's handwriting, and they call for one cup of Crisco, Lana. So what do you
okay. do? Okay. I've been weaning my way off of Crisco. So for my white cutout cookies this year, I went half lard, half butter. Works
and it
just
was
fine.
Really good.
Works just fine.
It works and better than fine.
This next recipe. Yes. Mocha nut butter balls does not start out with Crisco. It starts out with one cup
it's
soft butter.
Butter. Yeah.
So what's not to like? Mocha nut butter balls from my mom's recipe box. Here's the recipe. 1 cup soft butter, 1/2 cup sugar, 2 teaspoons vanilla, 1 egg, 2 teaspoons instant coffee granules or more to taste, 1/2 cup cocoa, 1 3/4 cups flour, 2 cups finely cut chopped nuts, and 1/4 teaspoon salt. Mix that all together. Let it sit in the refrigerator to firm up a bit, and then roll into small little balls and cook them on a parchment-covered cookie sheet in a kind of a slow oven, 325 degrees, for 15 minutes. Don't overbake, and they're pretty good.
And we have to say that in all of your cookies this year, you used the early morning harvest. That's the Iowa whole wheat pastry flour, right?
Whole wheat pastry flour. I decided, why not? We'll eat them anyway, however they turn out. And I must say, the whole wheat pastry flour worked great for all my cookies. I like to get into cookies. Smoked nut butter balls are good. They are not very sweet unless, get this. This recipe comes from my mom's Christmas cookie collection. So thanks to Dorothy Noctigal for this recipe. These cookies are full of coffee and chocolate flavor, and they are not too sweet. If you want to make these a little sweeter and a bit more festive, roll them in powdered sugar just before serving. Then these mocha nut butter balls would be referred to in the Noctigal household as snowballs, okay? So you've got your mocha nut and...
You don't have to roll them in the sugar while they're hot?
No, no.
Sugar adheres to them even?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Powdered sugar.
Yeah.
And actually, you don't want to... They're quite rich. You don't want to roll them beforehand because then the powdered sugar gets all kind of... gushy.
Yeah, it's like with a truffle. You don't roll the chocolate truffle in the cocoa powder until just before you serve it, because otherwise it gloms on and it doesn't stay powdery on the surface.
And I hadn't made these mocha nut butter balls for quite some many years, and I got reprimanded by Joe, my husband. Why haven't you made these before? Well, I have made them before, but it's been a while. It's nice to dig into those old recipes and good memories of good cookies.
Christmas is past.
Yes, it is. It's good. Let's see. Oh, I also did my usual riff on Pfeffernuss, and that Pfeffernuss cookie recipe is on the Donal in the Kitchen recipe page. Yes, it is. You can go to www.khoifm.org. Find us, find DLK, talk mm-hmm. shows.
Yep.
And there's recipe.
The recipe page. And Lana's Pfeffernuss, it's a pepper cookie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're wonderful. They're like one bite with a cup of coffee or tea. Highly recommended. They're spicy little guys.
And they last well. So, you know, keep them in a covered container and you can kind of dole those out for Christmas. Those are good. That's another memory of how things should taste for Christmas. I was kind of looking over the recipe page here and things you could, I ran across something that you could still make for Christmas as a gift. There's a recipe for Donna's honey butters. And that's a recipe.
Oh, right. That's a good one for children to make, you know, to give to Aunt So-and-so. You just take honey and, it needs to be at room temperature and the butter needs to be at room temperature. And with an electric mixer or even with a wooden spoon, you just beat the honey and the butter together and you can put in cinnamon and vanilla is one good flavor. Everybody loves that one. I like to do one with a little orange essence and cardamom, a different flavor. And that's something that's really easy for children to make. You put it in a little jar, tie a ribbon on it, and bam, you got a homemade Christmas present.
So there's still time.
Still time for that one.
There you go. Anyway, check out that recipe page. It's good. It's good. I was reminded of honey butter because I called from my friend Kate the other day, and she brought her family out to the farm to socially distance, if we stood a quite ways far apart, out of doors. They had this idea. Somebody told them about something called a Swedish candle, and they were bound and determined to figure out what is
a bit of an understatement.
Right. I looked it up. It's actually more appropriately called a Swedish torch because this is not the kind. I looked up Swedish candle on the web.
This is an out of doors sort of thing.
It's not one of these little Etsy things with the little scented candles. No, this is a torch. It's for all of you who have a little desire to light something on fire.
Play with fire.
Outside this time of year, and I can't think of a better way to do it. Here is something called a Swedish torch. It's also called a Finn candle or a Russian tree torch. Huh? It is a source of heat and light from a vertically set tree trunk. The trick is you take this tree trunk about a foot across and maybe 2 or 3 feet high, a chunk of log, a round chunk of log.
A good sized one.
Yeah. And you cut it, make an X on the top. A chainsaw helps here, folks. If you have a chainsaw, I suppose you could do it with an axe, but use a chainsaw and make an X quite far down into the log.
Like halfway?
A third maybe.
A third of the way on a 3 foot stump.
Okay. And then, as Kate explained this whole thing, traditionally you'd put paraffin down in there, or you could probably just put some, grass or some sort of
something highly combustible.
And then you light it. And surprisingly, it glows and it takes off, and it's evidently really a lot of fun. They took the log home to their house and did it in their front yard, and we drove by later, and
because they have young kids, it's a fun thing for children.
And guess what? Get this: oral tradition attributes the development of the Swedish torch to the Swedish military during the 30 Years' War. Using a saw or an axe, the Swedes are said to have made burning and glowing logs to warm their soldiers. Get this. The method of providing heat meant that the troops did not have to carry their own firewood with them, but were able to get supplies on site. And when Kate first asked for a log, I thought, well, it better be dry. But reading here about what the Swedish military did, they said they don't necessarily have to be dry. Actually, a slightly not dry log will burn faster once it is started. You don't want it to burn too quickly. You can use softwood, spruce fir pine, for heat, and you can use it for cooking, because theoretically you can have a flat top to start with, and you can cook on this log too. And those types for cooking are the hardwoods, like beech, oak, apple, ash, or cherry, and they're less sooty than the pines would be, pine or spruce or fir. Okay, there you go. So,
sounds like a good Christmas project.
Yeah. So I think, often think of bonfires and stuff out in the snow this time of year, and it's been so darn dry. I haven't even thought of a bonfire. My goodness, you don't want to set things on fire. But this is something that could actually be a little bit more.
You could do it on an outdoor patio.
I think you could have a snow shovel handy. But yes, it's good.
It's like a sort of an immediate fire pit.
It is. Kind it is. Like so there you go. Look up Swedish torch. I got this information from Wikipedia, where I get good things here. Yes. And choose a safe place due to flying sparks. However, this little sucker can get really hot, so get those marshmallows ready. I think that's good.
I think maybe don't pour any of the charcoal flame starter in it.
Oh, don't do that. No.
That would be tempting. But
so think of yourself as a soldier in the 30 Years' War in the Swedish Army, and do something festive for the holidays. There you have it. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, that's a fun thing to do. Yeah, because in the past we have had solstice bonfires.
Yes. Yeah. You could do it for Christmas. You could do it for New Year's. We got a whole slew of holiday opportunities here.
And everyone is suggesting, and rightly so, to do outdoor activities. This may be just the ticket. Yes, it would be. So that is good. All right. I want to mention that this is KHOI, and we're coming up on the holidays here, and you're listening to the Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about cookies today and holiday things. And look up that Swedish torch idea if you'd care to be a little pyromaniac, manic.
Well, we have to get creative for our cold Christmas here.
I kind of like that idea. That's good. That's good. That music that you just heard was a tune called Hildring by an artist called Eric Wolo, and it is from a compilation that I get it out this for the winter, this time of year, because it's called Northern Lights, Music from the Top of the World, music inspired, or actually most of it is even played by people in northern Sweden, northern Norway, and Lapland, and that one, Hildring. The liner notes aren't all that extensive, but the whole album always makes me feel kind of cold. Yes. My goodness. Northern Lights and things. Yes. And I chose that bit of music because we're going to be dealing with another topic that is kind of cold. Yeah. We're going to be talking about reindeer here. Holiday traditions are something that you ought to have here. Cookies are traditions, but in past Donna Lana Kitchens, we've talked to local people about what they do best, and I think in 2017 was the first time we interviewed Jim Peace, and what he is a wildlife biologist and person that can tell us about things, and let's listen to
Ames resident.
Yes. Let's listen to this past encore presentation about reindeer. Yes, it is that time of year. We have a special guest with us today. Yes, it's that jolly old soul with with the long gray beard and the twinkle in his eye. It's Jim Peace. Jim Peace, yes, it is. Welcome to our studio, Jim.
Well, thank you. It's really happy to see that there are actually two people here. I thought Lana Donna was
one person. Yes, Donna Lana Ding Dong, right?
That's right.
We couldn't do it without each other, I tell you. James Peace, Emeritus Associate Professor, Natural Resource Ecology and Management, ISU. And he has been a part of this community for a long time. You have heard his voice on public radio enlightening us about all sorts of things wild and animal-like and what the heck to do with about the squirrels in our attic, all that sort of thing.
You bet.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I asked Jim to join us today because he really is the go-to guy for the part of the world that we often ignore, all the creatures out there. And I'm going to ask him today about reindeer. So, Jim, what is this about reindeer? There's the American version. There's the European version.
There's Rudolph.
About?
I was going to say, do you want to know about Dasher or Dancer or Donner or Blitzen?
Yeah, I want to know about Rudolph.
So, Jim, what about reindeer?
Well, reindeer really the European version of what we call caribou in North America. Ranger fur, Tarandus, that's the genus and species. And like a lot of species, it's really a circumpolar species. It's one that surrounds not just in North America, but across Europe and Asia as well. And there
the
are
North
other
Pole.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're around the North Pole. And when that was connected by ice, 12, 14, 15,000 years ago, round in there, those species became, sort of, they were one species and they still are one species. But as the ice receded,
they got a little isolated genetic pockets.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
They got a little more isolated. And so you have some
Diversity.
Yeah, you know, diversity going on.
Oh,
exactly.
Boy, oh boy.
And adapting
and
to particular
noses,
conditions.
And some have, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's maybe where the red noses. I think those are Russian. No, I'm not
okay.
sure. So it has something to do with vodka. I don't know.
Okay.
So there are other species that are circumpolar that you might not think about too much. One is the snowy owls. Snowy owls are circumpolar. Weasels, the little ermine.
The white one
in the winter. Yep, those are circumpolar. Snowshoe hares and Arctic hares are both
fairy tale animals.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And in fact, the reason they're fairy tale animals is that the winters are long in the north. Right? Lots of times to come up with stories about the critters outside your window. And that's probably, in fact, where some of the other myths and stories came from regarding reindeer, et cetera, et cetera. Winters are long.
So I have a reindeer question.
Yeah.
Are they, in my mind anyway, are they bigger than the deer that we have? Are they just a big, shaggy deer? How much bigger are they? What do they look like?
It depends on the subspecies, because they range in size. So what we know in North America, across Canada, there's a boreal forest species of caribou that we call woodland caribou. The range used to be half of Canada, 50% of Canada. Was its range. Now it's much, much reduced, and it's probably been impacted a lot by oil and gas exploration, no question. But they inhabit forests, wet forests of the boreal forests that have lots of lichens in them and everything, because this is a species worldwide that is a very heavy eater of lichens.
Oh.
Lichens are those plants that come in lots of forms.
Is that fungal family or not?
No.
That's okay.
Right. It's actually two different plants, a fungus and an algae that you might say have taken a liking to each other. Sorry. Yeah, I don't get openings like that very often.
No, that's really perfect.
So
they're getting an algae and a fungal.
And a fungus.
They must
right.
have great gut biota.
Right, they do. And you're not talking about the algae and the fungus. You're talking about the caribou,
the
reindeer.
The algae and the fungus. Like, we should be all eating algae and fungus of certain sorts.
They do have the right biota in their stomachs, in their rumens, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
In order to digest those, can be fairly tough things to digest. Lots of other of the deer family, the cervid family, all the caribou are ruminants. That means they have a rumen, a gut like cattle do.
Do they have just one stomach or?
No, they have four.
Oh, just like cows.
And one of those is a rumen, which is really the important chamber, because that's the one that's filled with the right bacteria that can break down those plants.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have the right bacteria, or they're eating the plants that don't match the bacteria, they'll starve to death with a full stomach.
Whoa.
It's a tough one. So you got to have the right gut biota there, you know, in order to digest these things. So we're dealing across the whole world, the northern hemisphere. We're dealing with about seven subspecies of caribou or reindeer. So in Eurasia, in Europe and Asia, they're called reindeer. In the northern North America, they're called caribou. It's really the same species, but there are subspecies. We go back to the story when the ice separated them.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a few thousand years now, at least, to sort of develop some different genetics. So there are differences in size. There are differences in behavior. There are some genetic differences that are detected.
And these are based on that their environments have become slightly differentiated.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And there are sort of three ways that you can classify caribou. One is, are they barren ground versus more woodland? You know,
So what do the barren ground ones eat?
Well, they eat lichens, but they have to.
The lichens that grow on the rocks,
exactly,
and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. They have to scratch down through. In fact, the name caribou probably comes from a Gwich'in or some other native people's language, which means pawer or scratcher to describe their behavior as they paw down through the snow to get to the lichens.
So all winter, that's all they eat?
That's
they
exactly
dig in
right.
through the snow and they eat these little lichen off the...
off the rocks and off the... I mean, some lichens, there are different lots of different species of lichens, and some lichens stick up maybe... Oh, they're really tall, maybe 3 or 4 inches tall. You know, to about all the deer species, but especially caribou, they have special hairs. Their hairs are actually hollow. And so,
like possum hairs.
Exactly. Well, even more so. And they're like little tubes of air. And it's the dead air space then that provides, the wonderful insulation and better insulation. So that's what they have.
And do they also, since they're herding, do they like group together for warmth?
Okay. That's a really, it's not so much for warmth. Yeah, exactly.
Well,
there are more eyes looking out.
What are their predators?
Oh, Arctic wolves.
Ooh.
And polar bears, just about anything that's big enough to take down a caribou. And those are the two main ones in the Arctic, of course, would be. Another way to classify them is not just whether they're barren ground or woodland, but is based on their behavior. And the barren ground ones do tend, the ones in North America, to tend to be pretty gregarious. You know, they gather together in these huge herds.
Well, they don't have anywhere to hide from each other.
Well, you can't hide very much in the Arctic.
Lost.
And so the woodland caribou, for example, is a pretty pretty solitary critter. They don't get in large herds at all. So it's the same species, totally different behavior because it's been separate for a while. The barren ground caribou, of course, the porcupine herd you've probably seen on Nature and other channels on TV, these incredible migrations. And they're one of the longest mammal migrations in the world. Up on the calving grounds in the area that we now know as the as a wildlife refuge, they're opening up to more oil and gas exploration.
This is Alaska we're talking about.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And on the North Slope. And so they end up on the plains at just the right time for calving, and because that's when the richest availability of sedges and other grasses and grass-like plants come up, and that's what the young need, the mothers need, in order to provide the richest milk for their young.
So
but then the mosquitoes come out.
No, but they have fur. So do they, this big migration that they make, they obviously don't respect the border between Alaska and Canada, right?
Not at all.
They just do a whole North American
loop. Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Politics don't bother them at all. So
the wisdom of the caribou.
That's right. Absolutely. So then the mosquitoes come out and they begin to move. They keep moving. So they make this huge route. Woodland caribou do not. The reindeer in Eurasia tend not to be, while they do form, and again, there are 7 subspecies of the, of this critter, the reindeer fur.
Area.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And also the peoples of Europe and Asia reacted differently to the large herds of caribou than the peoples of northern North America.
They didn't all just eat them?
Well, they all ate them.
Okay.
But the ones in Europe, we think at least 2,000 years ago, the peoples of Eurasia, of Europe and Asia, actually domesticated some of those.
Oh.
So that's where we get
the Laplanders.
The Laplanders and other peoples. Actually, there are different different peoples that have domesticated the herds, and they've domesticated them to different degrees, but they all depended on them, so they reacted differently. And in fact, it's been interesting. They so there are 3 ways of classifying them: whether they herd, or whether they're solitary, whether they are barren ground versus a more woodland environment. So it's the sort of the ecotype they are, and then whether they are migrating or tend to stay in one place.
Oh, some don't migrate.
That's right. One of the things that they all have in common is that they all have these massive antlers, you know.
Oh, the picturesque stuff. Oh, there
absolutely.
You go.
Male and female.
Male and female. Exactly. Exactly. Very good. Very good. Because it's one of the few deer species that both males and females have antlers, although the male antlers tend to be a little bit larger. And
okay.
That and the fact that they have this sort of scoop shovel on the front that sticks out
for
straight.
Digging in this
exactly
no.
exactly
how
and they
clever.
They sweep their heads back and forth and that scoop shovel piece of antlers in front moves the snow.
Oh, I'd rather have one of those than a snowblower any day.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, it's kind of hard to get through doorways though. Yeah, we'd have to make doors a lot taller.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a blast out of the past. We got a traditional bit of Christmas there in with Jim Pease talking about reindeer, and that was a encore presentation from a Donna Lana Kitchen past. It's always nice to dive into the archives and see what was there, and I like that interview, and thanks to Jim Pease for enlightening us about reindeer. Yes. Yeah, very good. This is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. If you would like to find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen and this fine radio station, go to www.khoifm.org. And while you are there, scroll around and find out what other stuff goes on. This is a great place to put your ears this time of year, any time of year. This radio station is a community radio station. It's serving you 24/7. And think of this. Give yourself a membership to this fine radio station for Christmas, or give a membership to somebody that you love for Christmas, or even somebody that you don't like very much. Send them a membership for KHOI, and boy, won't they be surprised. Yes, they will. Good.
Pleasantly, we hope.
Pleasantly, yes. So, Donna, you've been cooking some interesting things.
I made one thing last night for our solstice dinner. It's from a cookbook that is features Central and Eastern European foods. So I had read through this one. It's a roast pumpkin soup. Now, there are a lot of pumpkin soup recipes, but this one really, this one is with chestnuts and walnuts. So, I used those Algonquin pumpkins, which they still have at Wheatsfield.
Longish sort of.
Yeah, it's not round like a pumpkin, but it has a good pumpkin flavor, a very nice pumpkin flavor. It's not quite as sweet as a squash, but it has more flavor than any of the sort of Cinderella type pumpkins. So, you just roast the pumpkin up, you know, scoop it out, put it in the oven and roast it till it's soft. And then you scrape it out of the skin. You don't want the skin in the soup. And then I took some olive oil and chopped up an onion. Actually, I did two onions because I wanted a stronger flavor. So you saute that up, and then as the onion is cooking, you throw in marsala. So we haven't talked about marsala. Marsala comes from Sicily. It's the closest thing you could think of would be a port, but it's not a port. It's a fortified wine. It's most commonly used in cooking to create nutty, rich, caramelized sauces. So I thought that would be a really good addition. So into the, you're cooking up the onions, you pour in, I put a good amount of marsala because I really like the flavor. And I put in some chopped fresh sage, some dried marjoram, and a bunch of chestnuts. Okay, here's a tip. I found a good way to get, you know, I mean, we do have local chestnuts, but they're hard to find. They're not very large and they can be quite pricey. I did find if you go to the Asian food store, there is one on Lincoln Way, they have vacuum-packed bags of chestnuts that are every bit as good. They're already roasted. They're already cooked. They're every bit as good as the French ones that come in jars or sometimes vacuum-packed, which are probably twice as expensive. So having found this nice source of chestnuts, I just zipped open a couple packages and dumped that into it. So then after that, you put, let's see, what did I miss? Okay, chestnuts. All right. Then you add some vegetable stock, nothing with very strong flavor, or water, and you puree the whole thing. I use my immersion blender. So you're dumping in the cooked down marsala with the onions and the herbs, the chestnuts, and you get a nice, really thick puree, and then you add buttermilk.
Oh,
you thin it with buttermilk and cream. It was really, really nice. And so there you've got your soup. And I made it fairly thick, like a potage, you know. And then there's a garnish for it.
Oh.
So you take walnuts in a frying pan, and I put a little olive oil in with the walnuts, a little salt, a little pepper, a tiny bit of sweetener. I think I used agave, but you could sprinkle sugar on it. Not too much. You don't want them to be really candied. You just... that sweetness picks up on the marsala in the soup. And what else? Oh, a little marjoram. So then you serve the soup in a bowl and you sprinkle in the walnuts on top. It was very festive, very healthy, lovely.
Chestnuts. When you said, you read me the recipe for the soup here, and you said marsala, and I heard masala as in the Indian spice.
No. Marsala. M-A-R-S-A-L-A. It is a wine. A fortified wine.
Now I know.
And it has a caramely taste. It's kind of what makes the whole thing. It's just something. It's a good idea to keep in your cupboard. And you can sip on it, too, if you want.
Yes. Yes. And here we are with our Marsala wine for our Christmas show. Although, no, I did taste it just in the spirit of science. Yes.
And being well educated in the palate is important.
It is not like a port, although you have a reference there that says you could use port if you had to.
Yeah. You could use a Madeira if you had to, but it's Marsala is easy to find. It's not expensive also.
Very good.
I think a classic recipe maybe people know is Marsala chicken. Huh. If you make a cream sauce with cream, right, and add Marsala and then cook chicken, I think it would be good with pork, too.
Huh.
Marsala is a nice flavor to add a little distinction to some holiday cooking.
It's true. It's nice to have something on your shelf that you can add when recipe calls for things like that. I mean, Donna has a much more varied liquor shelf than I do. I mean, and I've tried putting beer in things. I mean, that's kind of my go-to. I always have beer. But, you know, beer is not really what you'd want to add in place of Marsala.
Well, speaking of beer, you know what else we had for dinner last night? Beer floats. Now, I think we've mentioned this on the show before. But I got a very dark chocolate ice cream, a chocolate stout, and then I made whipped cream for it. And that was the dessert. It was really, really good.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Cold winter's night.
Like a root beer float, but a beer float.
Beer float. And stout is really good for making beer floats.
That's right. Now, you wouldn't think that stout, stout and ice cream, I suppose, would be pretty darn good together.
It's a lovely adult dessert.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. That's nice. I don't know. Since I have piles of Christmas cookies, I haven't been eating them all myself. They've been going out the door.
Lana, we ate cookies with the stout.
They kind of get eaten all the time. Sometime during this holiday, pumpkin pie is kind of my go-to. I haven't had my pumpkin pie for the holiday yet, but I'll do that.
Oh, for Christmas, you like pumpkin pie again?
Yeah,
such thing as too much pumpkin pie.
It's a winter thing. And on the Donna Lana Kitchen website, there is a pumpkin pie.
My cobbler recipe.
Yeah,
is on there.
Yes. Yeah. But there's a pumpkin pie from Provence, a French pumpkin pie, huh? That does not go with the usual pumpkin flavors, but it leans more toward, and here you could use maybe some marsala or some orange liqueur. It's got orange and lemon flavors.
Right, it doesn't scream Thanksgiving, that recipe. That's a good one for Christmas pie.
Yeah. So that's something else you can find on the Donalana Kitchen website. Another one of those things I haven't made for a long time. Good. Well, usually I like Christmas songs this time of year, and I like in Christmases past, I always look forward to caroling. Usually somebody would have a caroling party and we'd go and troop up and down the neighborhood. And
No Christmas tubas this year.
No Christmas tubas or anything. And you'd stand in front of somebody's house and sing badly and everybody'd come out in their socks. And that's a nice Christmas thing, but not this year. It's some things that we will look forward to next year. So we'll look for Christmas tubas. They used to be past years. Ames hosted the Tuba Christmas, and that was a good way to start off the holidays. We haven't got that to look forward to this year. Oh, we've got other things on our mind. We've got a presidential transition on our mind. We've got all sorts of nasty stuff happening with the COVID pandemic, and who would think? Here we are, pandemic is on our minds now.
Got to line up to get our vaccine, continue to wear our masks, socially distance, wash your hands, whatever. Don't sneeze on people.
Oh, yes, be kind to people. Okay, so today on the Donalana Kitchen, we talked about cookies and reindeer, and we had the Gravlax report. We talked about fire. We talked about the Swedish torch, also known as the Swedish candle. We had a fine encore presentation with Jim Peace. Thank you to Jim Peace for being on our show again. And we had a good squash soup recipe from Donna. That looked good. So, holiday wishes from us. Stay safe, wear a mask, and be kind.
Yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight.
We are back. That was Bob Dylan wishing you a Merry Christmas, and we'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas too. Thank you for lending us your ears. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We've had music from the CD Northern Lights, and we'll go out with a tune by Bob Dylan. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas, and Merry Christmas to all of you.
Thanks to Mike for excellent engineering. Eat good food and enjoy life.
Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. Someday soon we all will be together if the fates allow. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
Folks, Funding for KHOI comes in part from the Body of Christ Church, inviting you to their outdoor candlelight Christmas Eve service. There will be carols, candlelight, and community to safely enjoy Jesus' birth under the stars this Christmas. December 24th at 5:30 p.m. at Tom Evans Park in downtown Ames.